there's never an obvious time to think, oh, let's sit down and talk about donating our organs after death. But if you don't do it, it makes a hard time a lot harder.
Could he just make sure that Mark's organs didn't go to a specific football follower, Arsenal or Chelsea supporter? Because Mark was a Tottenham Hotspur fan, and this poor donor nurse didn't know what to say or to do.
Hi, I'm Mel Pickup, Chief Executive of Bradford Teaching Hospitals, and welcome to this, the latest episode of our podcast series, where I'm sitting down with colleagues and partners from across the Trust and the wider community to find out more about them and their contributions to the health and well-being of the people here in Bradford. This month, I'm going to be in conversation with two fantastic guests who are here to shine a light on the importance of organ donation. Dr. James Morgan is a consultant anaesthetist working in intensive care and is the clinical lead for organ donation at the Trust. Welcome, James.
Thanks, Mel.
And we're also joined by Karen Piotra, who is the chair of our Trust's Organ Donation Committee. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you, Mel.
So we'll start with James. James, I believe that you were working one night on a night shift as a junior doctor in A&E when you first saw the importance of organ donation.
We're going back a bit there, probably about 15, 16 years ago now. I was working up in Newcastle and a young lady came in who'd suddenly become very unwell with a brain bleed, and it was apparent that she was not going to survive. And although it was less widespread organ donation at the time, we suggested that might be a possibility to a family who felt that it was something that she'd wanted to do. Some of them had spoken to about that in life. She subsequently went on to donate six of her organs for life-saving or life-changing transplants. And I remember receiving a letter 3 or 4 months later from one of the specialist nurses in organ donation telling me about the organ recipients and the life-changing effect it had had on them. One of them was going on to become a dad. Subsequent to that, a lady had come off dialysis, being able to go back to running her own business. And it really brought home that life-changing and life-saving effect that just one person can have in the most tragic of circumstances to benefit many others. That stayed with me and has stayed with me over the subsequent years.
Clearly, you're the lead for the team, but there are other really important people in that team. Can you tell us a little bit more about them?
Yeah, for sure. So the Organ Donation Committee runs a triumvirate. So Karen is the chair and runs the sort of periodical business side of things, holds us to account. The other key member would be Raz Deegasana, our specialist nurse for organ donation. And Raz is the full-time organ donation professional supporting families both here and at Pinderfields.
We often think about some major organs, you know, heart and lung transplants, kidney transplants. But to hear that one person's donation can potentially save or alter the lives of six different people speaks to it being much more than just that traditional image of, kidney transplant, heart transplant, etc. Can you tell us a little bit more about the impact one single person might have on a number of individuals?
For sure. So in terms of what we refer to as solid organs, someone can donate after death both their kidneys, the liver can occasionally be divided. The heart obviously can be donated either on its own or as part of heart-lung transplant and the lungs, and also pancreas and intestinal transplants. So pancreas for people with diabetes and pancreatic disorders, and intestinal transplants as well for people with gut failure, which again can be life-threatening and unfortunately can be fatal. So as you say, a single person, especially in the context of donation after brainstem death, where it's very controlled, can influence, you know, 7, 8, 9 people's lives through that. Plus you've also got tissue donation. So heart valves, cartilage, skin, things like that can be donated after death. And in a more broad range of circumstances.
That's amazing. And so important that we use this opportunity, you know, this podcast, to encourage people to have those early conversations. And Karen, you became involved in organ donation advocacy in a very different way, you know, after the sudden death of your husband, Mark, in 2017. Could you tell us a little bit more about Mark and ultimately the decision that you made to donate his organs?
Yeah, so you talked about the importance of having that conversation, Mel. So Mark and I regularly gave blood side by side, and on the way home, in his true Yorkshire dialect, he'd say, "I've had a pint of my Yorkshire finest. If anything ever happened to me, I'm on the donor register, they can have the lot." Now, you never expect, at like 47 years old, to have to draw on that conversation, to be rushed to the hospital here at the BRI. And then there's people all over in the crash team here, and I'm like, What's going on? And then to be put into a family room, my own personal family came to be with me at that time. And then I do remember one of the doctors coming in to see me with quite a strange look on his face. And my niece is a nurse. She works in paediatrics at Leeds. And she took one look at this nurse and she just burst into tears. And I'm like, "What are you trying to tell me?" And he says, "We have put him in a coma. We've done a brain scan, and that brain scan has gone to our experts at Leeds. And they want to take him to Leeds, and they feel that he is young enough, healthy, and they want to operate him to give him the best chance of survival." And suddenly, yeah, that's a different day, isn't it? It's a different situation. And we're taken to the Leeds Hospital. I'm signing forms to give consent for him to have an operation. And if anything, worst case scenario, to not resuscitate him. And then I leave him to, you know, into the doctor's hands. And several hours later, I'm taken back up to intensive care. And he's hooked up to all sorts of machines. And they're like, "Yep, that went really well. We've relieved a brain bleed that he had." Came back next morning with that sudden look of dread on my face when I noticed the numbers on the life support machine hadn't changed. And suddenly it's quite a strange situation to be in. You have the awful pit of the stomach feeling. And that can't be good because they aren't changed. They're exactly the same as when I left home. But I'm just going to talk to Mark and I'm just going to pretend that nobody's here. And I just saw the doctor approaching out of my peripheral vision. And I thought, if I don't look at him, I don't have to listen to what he might have to tell me, because I'm just going to tell Mark what's happened. And suddenly I turn around and look to him. And yeah, that look, that they have this look on their face. And he said, "I just need to talk to you." And I just suddenly went, "You know, we're organ donors. Really?" And he's like, "Yeah, I need to talk to you now about what's going to happen, because unfortunately, Mark hasn't had a good night. His statistics have stayed the same. They haven't improved and this won't get any better. So we do need to talk to you about what the next steps are going to be." And there was the start of my journey for organ donation.
And the fact that you kind of said, "Well, you know that we're organ donators," and you've had that conversation, is one thing in the abstract, completely different when you are living that moment. What do you think it might have been like if you had never had that conversation?
I do often think about that to myself, but Mark was one of those very caring, compassionate men. If he saw a homeless man, he'd always buy him a sandwich or a cup of tea. If anybody was cold, he'd give them their coat. He would regularly drive some of the girls from the office home because he didn't want to get them in a taxi, you know, and all those situations. So I did think to myself, I would have made the same judgment. I would have made the same decision, because he was such a quiet, caring, compassionate man. He would just want to go on and help everybody. And if he could have, I didn't know at that stage, if he could have helped people in death like he had in life, I'm like, wow, that's just amazing. And he'd want me to do that. So I would have made the same decision.
And indeed, that decision left a remarkable legacy, didn't it? Supporting 9 people through the donation of his organs. And I believe, you know, we were just chatting before we started recording. You've got a fabulous dress on today. Tell us a story about that dress.
The dress, yeah. So one of the recipients of my husband's organs is Pete McKee. He's an artist in Sheffield and he has Mark's liver. And due to the remarkable second chance of life that he's got following his transplant, he had his 30th wedding anniversary just this year. And I bought this dress for that special occasion. So this dress has got a good meaning for me sat here today talking to you about organ donation. It makes me think of Pete and his wife having that amazing celebration of 30 years of marriage.
And so Pete was one of the 9. Do you know where the other 8 are? And what's the relationship, if any, that you have with them?
So not long after you have made the decision for your loved one's organs to be used as organ donation, you get a letter that tells you really just the gender and the age of the persons that have received organs. So in Mark's situation, there was a 19-year-old boy who got his heart, a 30-year-old man got a kidney, and the rest of the recipients were in their 50s.
Yeah.
And that's just amazing. I mean, I can probably hear in my voice that I'm smiling now, because that's just amazing, Mel, to think there are 9 people out there, but it's not just that single 9 people. It's their family, their loved ones, their siblings, their friends and family. So it's such a wide ripple of how organ donation can help people.
What I'd say, though, is it's not just those 9 people as a result of that decision that you made around Mark. It's the many hundreds, if not thousands, of people that you are now giving hope to because of your continued work in this particular area. So tell us more about where that decision around Mark has led you. We know that you're the chair of our organ donation committee, but it's much broader than that, isn't it?
It is. So I work for Bradford College, so we have a whole cohort of young students, and I regularly deliver workshops to those as part of their induction that we've just had for freshers. I'm also an NHS ambassador volunteer, so regularly give talks to Women's Institute, Rotary clubs, brownies and guides, again, getting that message out there to many, many people. And so it's just quite an amazing thing to do. And even so much in my role on ODC, I do that for a couple of other hospitals in the area, at Airedale and Calderdale, and I'm regularly asked to be part of the nurses' training day. So, you know, to let the nurses know what my story was and how they can help and have that in the front of their mind when organ donation could be a possibility for any patients that they're dealing with. So that's a lot of people's lives that if just one person, Mel, could go home and talk to their family about organ donation, having that conversation, because it's not an easy conversation to have. I just hope that I could relieve the burden on one other family, if they're ever in the situation I was in, that they would perhaps know, and it might make that decision a bit easier for them to agree to organ donation.
That's fantastic. We often talk on this podcast about the need to offer support for discrete communities. And in Bradford, we have a huge South Asian community for whom organ donation is perhaps more of a challenge. James, how do you see your work in this area changing some of the perceptions towards organ donation?
Well, I think we've seen with COVID that health inequalities and how they can affect the population of Bradford is a massive issue for the local population. And certainly that's really reflected in terms of the organ donation picture, in terms of if you're of South Asian descent, you're less likely to get an organ, you're more likely to wait longer for an organ. And that just feeds into this sort of spiral of inequality that we're facing. It's a key part of the job is to try and raise awareness and engagement. There's myths and misinformation out there. We've been fortunate in a lot of Bradfordians themselves, Muslim Bradfordians who've had experience, positive experience of donation, have gone out there and done a lot of good work themselves. People like Mohammed Zubair Butt, who is a very senior Muslim cleric, got into some of the detail of Islam and scripture, and because there are different interpretations, as with any of the major religions of the world, of scripture, and Is this consistent with Islam? And issued one of 3 or 4 reasonably recent fatwas or edicts about interpretation of scripture, stating that very clearly organ donation is very consistent with Islam and Islamic beliefs and its spirit of charity. I would encourage anyone who's got doubts about the compatibility of donation with their spiritual and religious beliefs to speak to their cleric, as it is consistent with all the major religions of the world are broadly supportive of organ donation. And we find often it's other factors, things like communication, things like access to healthcare, language barriers, culture, cultural practices, things like that. So we're really striving, and that's why today is great, is another way to try and get the message out there that there's loads of accessible information on the NHS Blood and Transplant website in multiple different languages. And I would encourage people to go out and seek that information and get the evidence, because as a Bradfordian myself, I think we're we're usually pretty aware that health inequalities exist. And very often it's easy to feel a bit helpless about that. The thing I'd say to anyone listening who's thinking, well, I want people like me and people like my loved ones to have a better chance of getting that life-saving or life-changing transplant. In this situation, the person who has the power to change that health inequality is you. Go on the organ donation website, register your intent, speak to your family, leave them certain. That's the single biggest action that any of us can take to improve that cycle of inequality. And so I would urge anyone listening to make that decision, because you're holding all the cards, and you should try and make sure that one of them is a bright pink Yorkshire organ donation card.
I mean, we recognise on the ODC of the diverse culture and heritage of this city. And one of the things that we've talked about, but unfortunately the pandemic stopped us, was going into schools as part of the key skills level 3 and 4 to talk to the children, to encourage them to have that conversation with their parents when they get home, with that hope and that legacy that, you know, that one of those situations, if it arose for them down the line and they're here in intensive care, they could draw on that experience. Oh, my child mentioned organ donation to me. I'm aware of that. We hope that that will be a big benefit to our community.
You've touched upon the pandemic's impact of some of the plans that you may have had, all of us have had, to do lots of things. But do you think that the pandemic has had an impact on people's appetite to have the conversations? Has anything altered in the mindset of individuals post-pandemic around this particular issue?
I think people have been reminded this last 2-3 years about mortality, about the importance of your health. You know, is the most important thing that we have, and hopefully it's brought into focus for everyone that harsh reality that you need to have some sit down and have some serious conversations. And again, I would urge them. There's never an obvious time to think, oh, let's sit down and talk about donating our organs after death. Mm. But if you don't do it, as Karen said, and as you've observed, it makes a hard time a lot harder if you find yourself in that unfortunate situation. So I would hope it's brought into focus for people, would urge them to have that conversation, leave your relatives certain, register your wish.
So James, you know better than anybody, we love an acronym in the NHS, and you've got the inglorious title of the CLOD. Mm. I'm guessing that's Clinical Lead for Organ Donation.
That is, well done.
So tell me about what the SNOD is.
So the SNOD is the Specialist Nurse for Organ Donation. That will typically be someone who has been a very experienced nurse in either intensive care or emergency department type environments, and then subsequently undergone quite a long period of training in communication, counselling, medical ethics, screening of potential donors, working with families, palliative care, end-of-life care, to become the specialist nurse for organ donation who supports families at the end of life. And is an expert in exploring what that person's wishes were regarding organ donation, and supports families at that very difficult time where, as Karen alluded to, they've had a massive shock, they've had bad news, they're facing up to the reality of losing a loved one. But at the same time as all of that, there is the possibility that their loved one's wish to donate their organs after death can be supported and other people might benefit. We know from research that is of immense comfort to families in that situation, as Karen said. That requires sensitivity, it requires experience, empathy, quite a lot of medical and legal and ethical knowledge as well to manage that process. It's a process that plays out usually over 24, 36, 48 hours, sometimes longer. They have an incredibly strong bond with the families that they work with. And Raz is our embedded SNOD. So he works here and at Pinderfields and is here on a sort of a week-to-week basis. And he's a healthcare professional that really does the nitty-gritty of making donations happen. And they're on call covering the whole region when they're not here and can get called out any time of night to go and get involved supporting a family. So they really are the linchpin of the donation process, crucial role, and we're very pleased and proud to have Raz.
Raz is amazing. I've met Raz on a number of occasions, and you literally could not, with the exception perhaps of you two, find anybody more passionate about this particular subject. And you're quite right, these are for all the wrong reasons, but all the right reasons, the most memorable times of people's lives. So, Karen, I imagine that you remember those conversations and who you had them with.
You do, Mel, because this person has to ask you, this donor nurse, has to ask you very personal, very intimate details about your loved one. And some people could be uncomfortable in that respect, but they don't make you feel rushed. They certainly don't make you feel pressured. You can have all the time that you need. You can ask as many questions as you need to. And I do remember asking him, could he just make sure that Mark's organs didn't go to a specific football follower, Arsenal or Chelsea supporter, because Mark was a Tottenham Hotspur fan. And this poor donor nurse didn't know what to say or to do to me. And even now when he sees Tottenham Hotspur on the television, he will message me to say, it always makes me smile and think of you when I see Tottenham. So you do have to have a very trusting relationship with this specialist nurse, because you are having to reveal all the most intimate secrets of your loved one. So they certainly are a role above themselves, and we're so proud to have Raz here at Bradford because he's just an amazing individual in himself. They all are.
I'm gonna stick with that sporting segue, if I may, because for many people who wait patiently on an organ donation list, the quality of their lives is vastly impeded. When they do get that, it's incredibly liberating, and it gives them the hope for the future, including the ability to do sport in a way that they probably have not ever been able to do. Karen, you were hugely involved in the transplant games that took place recently. In fact, had a really pivotal role in that. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this year's transplant games were here in Leeds, you know, my home city. And I had the privilege of lighting the opening ceremony flame. But not only that, Mel, to see the participants you've just talked about there, they've had this second chance of life. They're taking part in sporting events. Often they want to show you their scars and say, look, I'm running the 5K, look at my scar. But the joy and the sparkle in their eyes when they're doing and they're competing against everybody is just absolutely amazing. It just makes my heart swell with pride every time I see this. And this is adults and children alike as well.
That's amazing. Amazing. A huge honour, but hugely deserved, you know, to devote so much of your free time and energy to this subject is great. And bigger news even coming up. Go on, don't be bashful, Karen.
Don't
tell
be
us.
Bashful. Oh, gosh, Mel. So really, just hot off the press, I have been selected to be the Team GB donor family and live donor captain in Perth, Australia next April.
Wow.
Yeah, just wow.
That's fantastic.
Which is fantastic. Yeah, I'm really looking, really excited. Yeah.
So, Karen and James, if you could say one thing to somebody today to encourage them in a very brief sentence or two to do like Mark did and to be that difference and to give that gift of life, what would you say, Karen?
Have the conversation. Tell your family what your organ donation decision would be, and hopefully that would relieve them of the burden that I found myself in because they would already know.
James?
I'd say that last year in Bradford, there was in the district 122 people on the waiting list for a kidney transplant. Sadly, 9 of those people died waiting for an organ that didn't come. All of us can do something about that, which is go online, read up, register our intent to donate our organs, offer those people a chance, and make a difference. It's everyone that's listening, it's in their hands, you know. You've got the power to do something about this now, and it's really quick and easy.
Well, I, for one, have done that, and I have had that conversation. And I would really, really encourage, having listened to Karen and James today, everybody who has the ability to have that conversation. And that's it for this edition. Thank you to James and to Karen for joining me today. If you would like to find more out about organ donation and perhaps by joining the organ donor register, please, please do. And you can do that by going to organdonation.nhs.uk.